The last, three or four Sunday evenings, we have looked at the 10 plagues found in the first part of the book of Exodus, those plagues that were brought upon the Egyptians, and in particular Pharaoh. And back in Genesis 15, we have, speaking of prophecies, we have a prophecy about that very thing. Back in Genesis 15, a prophecy that was given to Abram, even before he was called Abraham. Genesis chapter 15, we'll begin reading this particular text in verse 12. Genesis 15, verse 12, and then we'll go to the ninth plague. Verse 12 says, "Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, horror and great darkness fell upon him. Then he said to Abram, 'Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them. Also the nation whom they serve I will judge. Afterward they shall come out with great possessions.'" And of course, many years later, we see this prophecy coming to take place. And in particular, we see this in Exodus chapter 10 and 11. Exodus chapter 10 and 11, we have the last two plagues that were brought upon the Egyptians. And we've especially been focusing on how each of the plagues each plague was an insult against various Egyptian deities. And so by the end of these 10 plagues, the Egyptians realized that their so-called deities that they served, regardless of which one of the dozens it was, had no real power. And so they came to understand that it was Jehovah who was the real God, and the gods they served were actually powerless. The ninth plague deals with darkness. Exodus chapter 10, beginning in verse 21 and going through verse 29, the end of that chapter. Verse 21, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may even be felt.' So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days, but all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. Then Pharaoh called to Moses and said, 'Go, serve the Lord. Only let your flocks and your herds be kept back. Let your little ones also go with you.' But Moses said, 'You must also give us sacrifices and burnt offerings, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. Our livestock also shall go with us. Not a hoof shall be left behind. For we must take some of them to serve the Lord our God, and even we do not know with what we must serve the Lord until we arrive there.' But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. Then Pharaoh said to him, 'Get away from me. Take heed to yourself and see my face no more. For in the day you see my face, you shall die.' So Moses said, 'You have spoken well. I will never see your face again.'" And I'm sure we can't really imagine how thick this darkness was, but no doubt it brought terror upon the Egyptians. It probably affected them emotionally and psychologically. Artificial light sources couldn't apparently even help them. I mean, they couldn't light oil lamps or candles or anything. I mean, they could not have any type of light at all. So obviously this was a miracle. And this was against so many of the Egyptian gods. Now, this darkness was so thick, it says that it could even be felt. This, by the way, is the same Hebrew word found in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, when it talks about how the Spirit was hovering over and it was darkness. That's the same Hebrew word. Absolutely no light at all of any kind. Total darkness. Some of these Egyptian gods, of course, the main god, the sun god, Amun-Ra, originally was two separate deities. He was represented with a man's body and a falcon's head, and on top of the falcon's head was like a solar disk, you know, to represent the sun, because he was like the main sun god. So imagine the Egyptians, this was like their main deity. And so if he wasn't able to counteract this darkness, then what god of their pantheon could? And so this was a direct attack upon them, upon that particular god. It was also an attack upon Horus, who was the sky god of Upper Egypt. He was considered a god of light. Atum, he was a sun god also, a minor one, I guess, compared to the other, and a creator. Ptah, who created the sun, the moon, and the earth. And of course, we could list a number of others. All of these, in the Egyptians' mind, should have had the power to counteract this pronouncement by Moses. But none of them could. 3 days of total solid darkness that was so thick they could feel it. And their gods that they worshiped, that they bowed down to, that they sacrificed to, had not the slightest power to get rid of this darkness. Not a single one of them. These gods of light, gods of the sun, ones that created the sun, the moon, and the earth, none of them could do anything against them at all. You know, 3 days is a common time period in the Bible. There was a man in the New Testament that was blinded for 3 days, and I'm sure we know who that was, Saul. After his experience on the Damascus Road, he was blind for 3 days, couldn't see a thing. But what happened to him when his eyesight was restored? He understood and was able to know who Jehovah was. Who Christ was in particular. But not Pharaoh. Pharaoh saw, experienced 3 days of total, absolute darkness, and none of his gods could do anything about it. But yet, at the end of those 3 days, his eyes weren't open to who Jehovah was. He said, you can go. But you can't take flocks and herds with you. Well, what was Moses' response? Flocks and herds are what we sacrifice. So by Pharaoh telling him, you can't take the flocks and the herds, he was basically telling him, you can't make sacrifices and offerings to your God. Pharaoh didn't want him to be able to do that. Well, of course, Moses' response was very sharp. It says, we're going to take the livestock with us. Everything we need, because we don't know what God will want us to do when we arrive. Moses was planning ahead. Great lesson there. Darkness in the Bible, really even beginning from Genesis chapter 1, going all the way through the Bible. You know, the Bible says in 1 John chapter 1 that God is light and in Him is no darkness at all. Darkness throughout the Bible often represents immorality, evil, wickedness, sin, transgressions. Darkness means being separated from God. We see that term throughout the Bible as well. In Matthew chapter 22, Jesus is giving the parable of the wedding feast. And there was a man that showed up at the wedding feast without a wedding garment. And this is what he tells that man, beginning in verse 11 of Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22, verse 11. But when the king came in to see the guest, he saw a man there who did not have on a wedding garment. So he said to him, friend, how did you come in here without a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Then the king said to the servants, bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen. Their darkness represents being completely and totally separated from God. Well, if God is light and there's no darkness in Him, there can be no darkness around Him. So this guy, because he wasn't prepared and didn't bring the wedding garment, was cast into outer darkness, signifying the furthest place as possible from God's presence. And what an awful place for that man to find himself. We see that term darkness also used in Jude's letter. Turn with me to Jude verse 6 and Jude verse 13. Jude verse 6 and Jude verse 13. Of course, most of Jude talks about apostates, talks about false teachers, people who lead others from God. And notice Jude verse 6. Well, actually, we need to go back to verse 5. Jude says, "But I want to remind you, though you once knew this, that the Lord, having saved the people out of the land of Egypt, afterward destroyed those who did not believe. And the angels who did not keep their proper domain, but left their own abode, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day." Verse 13. Talking again about apostates. "These are raging waves of the sea foaming up their own shame, wandering stars for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever." So when people are cast into outer darkness, this is a permanent, everlasting state. No hope, no chance of ever being in God's presence again. That is certainly the worst thing about being in darkness, is no hope. None whatsoever. So this plague of darkness that was brought upon Egypt, certainly in many of the Egyptians' eyes, brought them to understand who Jehovah was, but it had no effect on Pharaoh. So therefore, we are led to the last plague, which begins in chapter 11, verse 1. "And the Lord said to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. Afterward, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely drive you out of here altogether. Speak now in the hearing of the people, and let every man ask from his neighbor and every woman from her neighbor articles of silver and articles of gold. And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants and in the sight of the people. Then Moses said, Thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. From the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servant, who's behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the animals. Then there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall be like it again. But against none of the children of Israel shall a dog move its tongue, against man or beast, that you may know that the Lord does make a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. And all these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me, saying, Get out, and all the people who follow you. After that I will go out. Then he went out from Pharaoh in great anger. But the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh will not heed you, so that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. So Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the children of Israel go out of his land." There it is. And it is a very selective plague. This was a very selective plague. People throughout the ages have tried to come up with natural explanations for some of these plagues, and we've talked about some of those on Sunday night. This one would be very hard to explain naturally. How could an epidemic only apply to the firstborn? And not just of people, but of the animals. And never affect any of the others. Only the oldest one in the family. And it was just to the Egyptians, not to the Israelites. Very hard to explain naturally. It was a miracle. It was supernatural. God did this, and he picked out the firstborn. The firstborn had the greatest blessings in most societies. They were given the greatest honor in most societies. So by destroying the firstborn, he was destroying that honor and respect that came to the firstborn in the Egyptian society. And no doubt the Egyptians took that to heart. They knew there was no possible natural explanation for this death of the firstborn. And this plague was directed against all the gods of Egypt. We have talked about so many different ones, dozens of them, but this plague was basically against every single god that the Egyptians worshipped. In the next chapter, verse 12, Exodus chapter 12, verse 12, this is actually the verse that we started this series of lessons with. Exodus chapter 12, verse 12. For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. This was against all the gods of Egypt. The ones that we've talked about, the ones we haven't talked about. In particular, there were five I wrote down that this would have been a direct attack upon them because of what represented to the Egyptians. One was Meskhenet. She was the goddess who presided at childbirth. So to the Egyptians, every time one of the Egyptian women gave birth, this goddess was there presiding. Well, if this Egyptian goddess was real, how did she let all of these firstborn babies die? Well, obviously she didn't have any power. So this was a direct attack upon her so-called power and ability. There was another one that was called the goddess of birth. A different one. Men, who was the god of procreation. Well, he obviously wasn't standing over and watching to make sure these babies were born or they stayed alive. He had no power. One named Selket, who was the guardian of life. Reninutet, who was the guardian of Pharaoh. This particular god was supposed to watch over Pharaoh and his family. Well, Pharaoh's firstborn was also destroyed, was killed. So these five in particular were directly attacked by this tenth plague. And the Egyptian people, the common people, saw that their gods weren't able to protect them against Jehovah. Jehovah was the one that really had the power. And so none of these Egyptian gods, not a single one of them that they worship, none of them, they weren't able to do anything against these plagues. Well, we go on in Exodus chapter 12, down in verse 33. Well, actually back to 29, I'm sorry. And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he, all his servants, and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. Can you imagine? Every single house had at least one dead. Well, then he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, "Rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you've said. Also take your flocks and your herds, as you've said, and be gone and bless me also." And the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, "We shall all be dead." So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes on their shoulders. Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. They plundered the Egyptians. God had given them favor. And then down in verse 40, "Now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years, and it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations." We know the rest of the story. We know how the children of Israel left Egypt miraculously. And by the way, many Egyptians went with them. It wasn't just the Israelites that left. Many Egyptians left with the Israelites. And of course, they went into the land And because they disobeyed, they ended up wandering around for 40 years. Now, this amazes me because the Israelites had witnessed all of those miracles as well. They had seen how God had protected them through all of those plagues. And yet, as soon as they got past the Red Sea, into the wilderness, what'd they do? They started complaining. Now, from the time they left Egypt to the Promised Land was maybe a 2-week journey. They should have been there in a couple of weeks. Instead, it took 40 years because they disobeyed God after they had seen these miracles, after they had seen God's protection, after they had seen God, what God had done for them, they ended up disobeying. It's quite a tragic story in some respects. The psalmist will write about these plagues many times, different psalms. It's been memorialized for us to teach us lessons. Everything in the Bible is to teach us lessons. Certainly, we learn from these plagues that there's only one true God. All others are false gods. It doesn't make any difference where they're from or who worships them. They're all false gods. There's only one true God, and He's Jehovah. And He's the one we worship. That's why we're here today. We're here to worship Him and nothing else. And it's all about being a follower of Him. As we mentioned this morning, when all is said and done, the only thing that's important at the end of life is, have we lived a life pleasing to God or haven't we? And that's what it's all about. And if we haven't lived a life pleasing to God, then the life that we have lived has been wasted. It's been a complete waste. So what's important is for us to make sure we're living a life pleasing to God. That means becoming a disciple of Him by being born again and then living faithful throughout our lives. God gives us opportunities while we're alive to make and do the right thing. And maybe tonight you need to do the right thing. And if it is the night for you to do that, then we encourage you to do the right thing by coming as we stand and sing this song.